Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod once again. 2024 Super Rugby just keeps on showing us that we don't really know what on earth is going on. Once again, teams get toppled, teams get up. We saw the Hurricanes go down. We didn't pick that, despite the fact, I suppose, that the Brumbies have been so strong against them at home because they were so poor against the Blues the week before. The Blues get up big time. The Crusaders get up big time. Sevu Reece, is he the most impactful winger in the history of Super Rugby? We'll ask that question as well. The 7-6 result in Dunedin, what was going on there? 7-6 under a roof? That wasn't much of a game of rugby in comparison to the rest. So let's get on to it with all the guys. Of course, we'll have your questions. We'll have the tipping comp as well. So stick with us here on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. None with me in the studio today, both fellas in the big screen. First of all, James Parsons over in the United States. Been a tough time for you going to Lakers games and things like that.
Mate, it's been a good week. Came up to a World Players Conference. The big focus is around how we can better support our professional athletes outside of footy, but also we also understand that if we can get that right off the field, it normally leads to good performance on the field. And so plenty to download at a later date. I must admit, my brain is a little bit fried. It was a big data download, but we had some fantastic speakers, and I'll touch on them in coming weeks. And then I've just grabbed the opportunity to connect with a few NPC based players that are up here playing in MLR. Went and watched the New England Free Jacks and LA today, where the Free Jacks got up with Jason Potros putting on a clinic. But plenty of our players are up here, which is great. There isn't a players association as such, so I really want to take that opportunity to make sure that, you know, things are all good up here.
Looking after the guys there. Of course, we've got players over in Japan too, like Bryn Hall.
I'm hoping, Ross, that we can get a snippet of actually James' batting swing on his Instagram. So hopefully we can chuck that in the intro because, hell of a swing, boy. So
I was a little bit excited. I said to there was a pitcher that had played for the Yankees and Giants and also. I said, geez, I'd love to receive a pitch for you. And he turned around to me and he goes, mate, I'll meet you in the batting cage at 8 a.m. And I was like, oh, God, this is happening now. I'm going to have to really sharpen up. But it wasn't too bad. He was lobbing them in, let's be honest. And I said to him, I was like, oh, mate, can you give me some heat? I want to feel a little bit of heat from you. And he just goes, you don't want that, sir. I was like, okay. Mate, I went at him a couple of times hoping he'd, you know, sort of give in. And he walked straight up to me about the third or fourth time. He goes, I promise you, you don't want that. I was like, okay.
There's big batting cages over in Japan, Bryn. You must have been into a couple of those along the way. You have a couple of brews and then you head in and try to hit as many balls as possible.
Where we kind of, it's quite small and there's not a lot to do here. So if you are in Tokyo and in Osaka, you are privy to having those opportunities to do that. But yeah, baseball's massive over here. So hopefully I can get an opportunity to get a swing, and hopefully Jibba can give me some tips around the batting swing and the kind of technique that I have when I do it.
I don't know why I put these posts up anymore. I just get absolutely ridiculed. Right? If it's not on here, it's from all my mates.
Okay, well, let's get into it big time, what you've been up to in the US next week, maybe when you're back, and talk a little bit more about the players' associations and what you're trying to achieve and what's going on globally in that area once you're back and you've had a chance to download. We've got a bit to talk about this week, guys, because the Brumbies 27, the Hurricanes 19... was not something many people picked based on what we'd seen in previous weeks. I know that the Brumbies won 6 in a row against the Hurricanes at home, but based on what we've been seeing, it didn't look very likely. Brenner, what were your first thoughts watching that game about this Hurricanes team and how things changed?
Yeah, I think it just shows the competitiveness of the competition. I think, you know, the Brumbies would have been disappointed with their result previously, and I think they went back internally. And I think knowing what the Hurricanes had done, we've spoken massively around them, around their loose four, their tight five, being able to win quick ball and being able to, I guess, get over that advantage line and gain line success. So I think, look, they were stern in and around their forward pick. I think, you know, in that first half, they had better gain line percentages and they were tackling at 91%, which Jip has alluded to a lot in this podcast around their defensive system being at that 70, 79%. They were a lot better in that space. And I think that clean out, Jip, I don't know if you saw it, but you know, they were cleaning quarters and taking guys to the ground. It seemed very, very physical and they were very simple in their approach around getting very quick ball and dominating that collision area. And you saw early on a few missed tackles from the Hurricanes due to that quick ball and that gain line success. But at the same time, I thought their attack, Tamati Tua, was massive for the Brumbies on the weekend. I thought, knowing that the Hurricanes do bring a massive line speed, their second pivot was a lot deeper to try and get to the edge or been able to kick him behind. So I thought they also took their opportunities as well. They haven't been as clinical this year, but you know, I thought there are moments in that game they were able to score points and accumulate pressure. And probably the first time the Hurricanes have felt pressure, and probably something that will, I think, will set them up nicely. I think they'll learn from that, and knowing that sometimes when you do have a loss, when you're on a good run, you go a little bit deeper around your prep and your analysing and how things went. So yeah, very impressive from the Brumbies, and they continue the streak of beating the Hurricanes in Canberra.
The big thing for the Hurricanes, which was different, was they didn't have a lot of ball and they didn't have a lot of territory. And I thought the Brumbies really executed their kicking strategy really well. And then I agree, I think they dominated the collision area, especially around that breakdown. And also the one-on-one tackles you mentioned, Tamati Tui, he obviously scored a great try. But so often we've seen in previous games, I suppose the Hurricanes have dominated possession, dominated territory, and really pressured teams and their skill set through that line speed pressure. They just weren't able to execute it. And I think it's worth noting, like, sometimes you do have these bogey teams and maybe it creates a little bit of a mental hoodoo of such. And the Brumbies do seem to have, particularly in Canberra, the Hurricanes number.
If your team's looking at how you beat the Hurricanes, I think the Brumbies set up a pretty good DNA in and around that. I think, you know, with line speed pressure, if you were able to get over that ball and clean corners and being able to make it a little bit tighter and your second pivot is a bit deeper, you have the opportunity to be able to get to the edge. You know, Tamati Tua made some really good decisions around carrying, but also, you know, later in the piece of that game, being able to get the ball to the edge and then put it in behind with Ruben Love with their fullback in behind coming up. So, I think if teams are looking at that, it's a pretty good DNA of what is required to beat these Hurricanes. And to the Brumbies' credit, they were able to do that for long periods of the game. I think it's going to be the challenge against this Hurricanes team. You've got to be able to stay on for 80 minutes. Yes, you're not going to win all the moments, but if you can collectively stay on for long periods of time, and like they did, and get out to a very good lead early on, the Hurricanes have to chase and then they have to start asking questions around how they can beat them.
Yeah, Bryn, totally agree. I think that cleaning corners was massive for the Brumbies because it shortened up. As you know, if you want to run a rush defense, you need numbers on feet. And if you can clean corners around that breakdown, one, make the ruck a little bit deeper so the fence has to step back and be online. But then if you can hold bodies in that ruck, it means they've got 12, probably best case scenario if you do it well, to get up under that line speed pressure. And then if your one-on-one tackling's off, it does work into your hands. And I thought the Brumbies really controlled that contact area. We've talked about the loose boards of the Hurricanes, every week. I think anyone's allowed an off week. I don't think it was off. I mean, Duplessis Creasy, she still made 20 tackles, but the Brumbies probably put in their best performance this season, in my opinion. I still think they've got some defensive frailties that the Hurricanes weren't able to take advantage of, but they are timing their run quite nicely, the Brumbies.
Chip, it was interesting you say he made 20 tackles, because you kind of felt the reason he had to make 20 tackles was part of the reason why they weren't able to really dominate the ruck. He was off doing something else because he had to.
Yeah, absolutely. And he made a lot of double efforts and all these things lead into it. Obviously the Brumbies like their set piece. So as I say, I think the territory and possession stats, you know, around that 36, 37, gives us a clear picture why they struggled, because they've had everything I suppose, on the front foot in the first few weeks.
They seem to be stuck between halfway and their 22 a lot.
I hate saying it because it just sounds so cliche, but win the collision, then the holes and defense will give you the pitches. They probably didn't utilize their kicking game as much as I'd like. And then on top of that, the Brumbies did provide opportunity. They just couldn't take it this week.
I think we've seen in this competition, Jip, that being at home for teams, it's a lot different. These Australian teams are very hard to beat. You look at the Reds and the Blues, we'll touch on that. And then the Crusaders have lost in Australia as well. So we both know as players playing overseas, it is a different beast. And so if you don't get it right, which we saw the Hurricanes in that first 30 minutes with the points that were scored against them, you then start chasing. And then it's a lot harder to be able to obviously score points and get the win when you're not getting those results in the early part of the game.
Yeah, and I think it probably we need to acknowledge the Blues and the Chiefs getting those victories in Aussie. Like,
what?
We have come accustomed to just expecting that. More so probably Brisbane. Like, Brisbane's a tough place to go. Like, it's so humid, the ball's slippery. It's just a niggly environment. Like, the fans are pretty much right on top of you. Speaking from a hooker's point of view, they are pretty much in your earlobe. Giving you abuse. So it is a challenging place to play. And I suppose both the Chiefs and the Blues, you know, they didn't make it easy for themselves, but they got the job done.
Just to go back to that cleaning element, we do have an email that's come through this week. And please flick us through an email to aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. Go into the draw to win one of these player sport rugby balls. About cleaning, this comes from Jared Simmons, I think it is, or Jared Simons. We'll find out, I suppose, in due course. If rugby is going to allow cleaners to purposely go off their feet while driving a tackler who is already on the ground out of a ruck, then surely that tackler shouldn't be penalised for not rolling if he is pinned by the cleaner who went off their feet to clean him. What do you think about that statement, Chipper?
I think there's an art form in tackling the tackler. And if you get it done right, that's part of your role is to not get put in that position.
Right. What is the art form to that?
Well, I mean, it's allowing, I suppose, four legs against two as such. Because if a player's double-teaming, you can move one tackler and then your power's allowing to push them through that contact. Even if it's 1 metre, that's a win. But if you get it wrong, you can actually land on the wrong side and provide opportunity to the opposition. So it's. I feel like you've got a bit of skin in the game to get it right. If you get it right, the defender will obviously pay the price. But if you get it wrong, you will pay the price, if that makes sense.
And Brendan, that is the difference between 3 second, 4 second, 5 second ball coming out of that ruck. And that's the difference between you getting over the advantage line, scoring those points and winning in Canberra.
That's exactly it. And there's an art to it. And, you know, good teams, defensive sides are having that 2v1 kind of focus is really important on both sides of the ball. And, you know, to be honest, if your attack or your defense can get that right, more times than not, you're going to get some really good outcomes off that. And, you know, as a halfback, for me, I know personally, you know, if a defender's coming into that space and they get their tackle technique a little bit wrong and they're on my side of the ruck, you know, we're going to try and milk a penalty. Refs have been a lot better around that, but you do run the risk of not getting that right. So I think both sides of the ball, you've got a job to do. And, you know, good defensive sides, like, you know, the Blues are probably the best defensive side at the moment and in around getting that really, really right. And so, it's a great part of the game and you need to get it right. And the good defensive teams will make you pay around that.
You get into it on that. What are you going to say?
Just like everyone has jobs, part of your job as a person that cleans out is you want to land on top of the player you're cleaning so that they can't get in the defensive line. And that's what I sort of was saying before with the Hurricanes is you lose two players, even one, your whole system of rush D in particular makes it just that much more challenging to cover that space. So, yeah, I just think we don't want to lose that. Because then you might as well just be playing the ball like Lee.
So the Blues, Jip, 41-34. They were particularly good right at the end to come through. They showed a lot of guts, a lot of determination. Bryn mentioned just before about the Blues' defence. This is probably the first time we've seen that really bent by the Reds.
It's probably been the first time it's been bent all season, really. Like, there was obviously the Blues... Sorry, we. I'll take that back. The Blues. The Blues against the Hurricanes obviously conceded some points, but outside of that, they've been a pretty clean sheet. And they were efficient. I don't think they're as efficient as they have been, but I do think the conditions of Queensland are troubling. Like it is another, yep. I suppose, with the humidity and the heat and I suppose the travel as well is always going to sort of drain the tank a little bit quicker. What I loved about them is how efficient they were in attack. Like when they got their opportunity, they took it. I think they had 7 entries, 6 tries, really clinical when they got down that far end. Probably an area that has been a struggle. Like if we look back at the Crusaders game, there were a lot of opportunities for the Blues at Eden Park, put more points on. They didn't quite do it. Whereas I think even though they weren't as efficient on defence, this is a real big win. And then what we've seen from the Blues, and let's remember that Hurricanes game, there were sort of issues around subs and so forth, 6-2 split bench, and it posed its challenge with 2 HIAs. Not making excuses, but I suppose they seem to, in the big moments when the game's on the line, be able to come through, which we haven't seen. Certainly not in my time when I played there, and probably when it's mattered, especially against the Crusaders the last few seasons when it's a finals match. When it's on the line, the Blues haven't quite been able to get across that. That was the most impressive thing for me. The composure, the skill set, the ability to keep playing towards the end was just special, special.
Yep. Bryn, there were effort plays throughout. I think, you know, Funaki's chase on the Plummer kick, those kind of things, like, it makes you think this is a championship team dialed in, or certainly a team that is very much in the running for that.
Yeah, and I think it shows your environment when you've got players that are doing that consistently, and it shows the amount of care and trust that you have for your players and, I guess, what you believe in within your team. So, yeah, look, the Blues did really well, and we've got to credit the Reds. But that forward pack of the Reds, very similar to what the Brumbies do. A lot of the Australian teams actually in and around that breakdown area have been pretty ruthless, I believe, this year. And I think, you know, the Reds, anytime they get into that 22, I don't know, there were about 3 or 4 times in that game where they were in multiple phases of 10, 15 plus phases when they get into that zone. So, you know, the Australian teams, and especially the Reds, when they get into that area, they are brutal in and around being able to hold on to their ball and, I guess, zap the energy, especially in Suncorp against the Blues, to get the job done. So we've got to credit the Reds. But yeah, I think what I really enjoyed from the Blues is that, you know, I think it was 31-20, you know, Tim Ryan, who had a great debut as a young man, hat trick. Hell of a try. And I think, you know, coming back to the Blues, you know, with Kurt Eklund and Sam Nock, and, you know, their guys, those guys coming on were pretty big and around the bench. And I think Hosko Satutu in that last 10 minutes, he looks like he's the fittest he's ever been, Jip. The effort areas of being able to play for 80 minutes, of being able to come up big, has been huge for the Blues. But yeah, I think lastly, the most thing that I was impressed is they were able to get the job done. They were able to get the job done and pretty tiring conditions, and I think what was involved and, like, I guess what was required in that last 2 minutes to win that game, they were able to do it in a hostile environment. So yeah, they'll want to improve on a few things, but to get a win like that, I think how the Australian teams are playing and how hard it is to win away from home at the moment, it's definitely the one the Blues will be pretty happy around at the back end of the year when they get into that table situation.
Chipper, a word on Hoskins or Tutu?
Yeah. There's someone in the Chiefs jersey that looks very, very similar in the way he plays in Wallace Satiti. But yeah, I think Hoskins is pretty motivated, pretty determined. He's got the bit between his teeth, obviously left out last year. We all know he's All Black quality, not necessarily been given an opportunity for a long stint in that All Blacks jersey. But I also feel like he looks like a player that sort of put that aside and just wants to have fun. And I know that sounds so silly because it's a professional level game, but when a player can clear his mind and he plays on instinct, there's a lot of training years behind Hoskins Satutu now. He is an experienced Super Rugby player, so his instincts are actually, you know, a strong part of his game. And, you know, no matter what he's doing, kick, pass, run, tackle, he's a threat. But Bryn probably touched on the most important point physically, he's bigger, so he's dominating collisions, but he's fit. He's going the distance.
When you look at a player like that, you think, well, maybe you could get bogged down in all of the extra stuff that would take him away from the natural elements of his game, but he seems to have found a way to combine the two of them, Bryn.
Oh, and that's exactly it. I think it's the constant effort areas around. We know how good he is with ball in hand, but, you know, the breakdown area, being able to clean rucks, being able to do a covering tackle, being able to get double efforts in a defensive line, you know. So I think through maturity and I think having the time in the saddle, and Jip alluded to obviously playing without a bit of pressure, it seems like he's playing with no pressure. Do you know what I mean? There's not that kind of thought of being in the All Blacks. And I think with his performances, that's going to take care of itself, I believe. But, yeah, he's playing very free, and I think, you know, that has to come back to the coaching group. Vern Cotter, I'm not too sure, I'm not in and around that environment, but, you know, maybe he's bringing the best out of Hoskins, and not only him, but I think a lot of those Blues forwards have really been the staple of that Blues team, and why they're in the position where they are. That forward pack is pretty dominant, and I think what wins championships in the back end of the year is the set piece. They can go to their scrum as well, which I think is very, very dominant. And, you know, when you've got a good scrum at the back end of the year, especially in wet, dewy conditions, and you can call upon that, and also their line out and getting into that 22-metre zone with hard carries and being able to win contact areas in that area. There's a lot of ingredients that you'd have to be happy with that coaching group and Blues fans like Jipper and co to see where the Blues are going this year in 2024.
So, Jip, is he first dibs on that 8 jersey against England for the All Blacks, do you think, that Hoskins has to have that 8 jersey?
Oh, after saying we, so I think I'll just cut my brakes tonight. And let Hoskins' actions speak for themselves. I do think, though, experience plays a massive factor in Hoskins' ability to be instinctive, you know, because you can be a little bit more, I suppose, able to predict where play is going to be, which means you're going to be earlier, which means you're winning races, which gives you the best opportunity. And he looks like a man that is just coming into his prime through that experience. And I agree with Bryn, the forward pack, you know, especially those first few tries, Patrick Tuipulotu particularly, like, took a lot of tough carries. He's a man, I think, that you know, is putting his hand up for that England series as well. So Vern certainly seems to be doing a lot right, but I also want to acknowledge Dan Halangahu and Craig McGrath as well, and Paul Tito. Like, there's a lot of work that's going into this game at the moment that is allowing them to deliver when it matters.
Now, one of the things that I thought was really interesting post-match, guys, was a shot of Vern Cotter, who I've always thought was a fairly stern character from what I've seen in the media, coming onto the field, smiling, laughing, hugging his players. And I thought, wow, Jip, that is the kind of guy that they want to play for. There seemed to be a connection there. That's got to be a big element in this.
Yeah, I think when you see scenes like that, it's a little bit like everyone's got each other's back. You know, like, it wasn't a perfect performance. So sometimes coaches, I suppose less experienced coaches, can come down and be a little bit stern. But I think he knew the gravity of that result for the side and the work that had gone in. But also understanding, I've spent a lot of time together now, so a lot of walls will be being broken down and they'll be getting closer, and those sort of strong relationships will be built. He is stern from what I hear. They call him Stern Vern, but I think it's a term of endearment a little bit. And I think they like the simplicity of his communication style. He says it how it is, and he doesn't waste his words. And as a professional player, Bryn will be able to talk to us as well, you know, at least then you know exactly where you stand. You've either done well, you haven't, you know where you've got to work on and so forth. And it allows you to probably short circuit that sort of ability to work out why you're not in the team or why you are in the team.
But just on that as well, Jip, I think he must have a very good balance in and around talking to us and having those relationships with players, because I think, you know, Stern Vern, you'd think, you know, would be the person that would be very, very hard and, you know, obviously this is how things should be done. We need to be better in this space. But with the results that I feel like the Blues are getting, and, you know, you look at the scenes that you saw after, a real care in and around for the coaches. And I think that's collectively, you've got obviously Dan Halangahu, Craig McGrath that's there as well. But, you know, he must have a very good balance around that relationship, because the players are playing for him. Well, it seems like from afar that they are playing for their coaches, which is, you know, sometimes it's very hard to have that balance if you're very stern. And that's your approach when you coach.
I think it is... I do think what I'm hearing is it's there's no grey. You know where you stand, and that is just. And now there's a lot of respect being built for both sides putting in. You know that he's seen the boys, you know, sort of leak the oil to get these results, and he's put the work in to allow them to play a game plan that are getting these results. And I do think, you know what it's like when a new coach comes in. I don't know. Like it does take a while to get that rhythm.
Right, so we've got to let Jipper go now because he's got important players association duties to jump to. So thank you for your time again this week, Jip, and we'll see you again back here next week.
You're in trusty hands with Bryn to talk about the Chiefs and Landers. Cheers, team.
Cheers, mate. So going from a place with a coach that's doing the business to a place with a coach has been under pressure in the media in the last little while. The CEO's even stepped in and said, hey, get off this guy's back. He's giving it a good crack. It's all a bit childish. But the Crusaders, they got up big time, 39-0 against the Rebels, who, you know, sitting in fifth place on the table do not look like an authentic fifth place team right now after that loss to a team that's been struggling. But probably most importantly, Bryn, the return of Scott Barrett. A player comes in and makes such a ginormous difference like that to the point where his team just looked like an utterly different team.
You look at the involvements that he had when it comes to the scrum penalties. You know, we're obviously touching on Scooter as a whole, but, you know, collectively in that eight, when it comes to the scrum penalties, you know, I think they had seven in that first half, and the Rebels had to take off their front row in that 30-minute mark based on around that scrum cohesiveness that the Crusaders did have. But, yeah, his defence in the line-out as well. Got some defensive steals very early on, which put the pressure on the Rebels forward pack. And, you know, I even look at one of the instances where it was, whose try was it? On out more. It was the 43rd minute, Leo Willey's second try. You look at Scott Barrett and how influential he is with that. His ability with ball in hand to be able to stay so square to the line. You've got Brody McAllister running a tip out the back, and then from that, they're able to score points off that with Leo Willey in the corner. But, you know, all those things that Scooter brings to that team when it comes to set piece, his work rate, his effort areas, and I think his carrying clean is really important for that group, which I think they've been missing a lot. So, yeah, a hell of an effort for a guy that's been out. It doesn't seem like he has lost any form of fitness having that much time off, and was massive for that group. So, yeah, hopefully now, I've talked about it a lot, Ross, hopefully this is a springboard for that group now to get some wins and hopefully make that quarterfinal seventh or eighth spot. But, yeah, a great start and for Scooter, and has come at a really good time getting that win, a dominant performance with a 30-0 win over the Rebels on the weekend.
You spend a lot of time with Scott Barrett. I mean, outside of his obvious athleticism for such a ginormous man, having such a ginormous tank to get through it, as a leader, what were the kind of things that he'd be doing? Is he a great communicator? What is it that he does to lead this team?
Oh, he's a great leader. Definitely actions. You know, you look on the field and what he brings. He does that every single week. And I think as a captain, it's really important to be able to play well every single week. And, you know, Scooter does that at a very high level for the majority of the games that he does play. And, you know, I think he's got better in and around his understanding of being a captain. I think when he first was given it, was a very good player. And I think has grown into that role along with, you know, having the likes of Sam Wildlock in behind the scenes.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
For a long period of time, and now, you know, I think it's his third or fourth year as the captain, alongside with the leaders in and around that group collectively, we're seeing the best version of Scott Barrett. So, yeah, I think, you know, first and foremost, his performances on the field is what makes you want to play for him. He leads by example on the field, and he does his prep away from rugby park and on games. So, yeah, I think it's very easy to follow a guy like that when he plays well, and his improvements within his captaincy has been really good in the last 3 or 4 years.
The calculators are saying that the Crusaders are probably going to make it, if the computers are right, into the top eight in order to make those playoffs, which would scare a few people, of course. They've got the Reds at home, the Highlanders away, the Brumbies away, the Blues at home, Moana Pacifica at home. So if you look at that, you would expect them to maybe beat the Highlanders and Moana Pacifica. Brumbies away, Blues at home could be more difficult. So two wins would get them very much into the inkling. Do you feel like they're in the right place to do that? Because we had a similar discussion a few weeks ago and then they fell off again.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge, isn't it, Ross? I think it's the challenge for them this year is that, you know, we're thinking that one win might springboard them to a few more wins. But I think for that group, knowing, I guess getting that win on the weekend is a little bit of a sigh of relief to be able to get some points and to now hopefully to be able to have some points now and pick up some wins. But I think what Scooter Barrett brings to that group is going to be massive. You look on the weekend, that forward pack were able to win the set piece, which we've talked around, has been a bit of an Achilles heel. They were able to dominate scrum and line out defensively and on attack. And I think more so, you know, having guys like David Harvilli back, who will get some more minutes in his belt in the next couple of weeks. Hopefully now we're going to see a more improved performance. And I guess the challenge for them now is knowing that they've got it done, but they know what's required over the next month. And very similar to, you know, the last couple of years, even though they're in a different position on the table, they kind of get better as those last weeks go in towards the finals. So, you know, hopefully that's what's going to happen for them now. But I guess it's more of a sigh of relief that they're able to get a bonus point win. And now with those guys coming back and hopefully building more minutes under their belt, they get a free swing, you know, that 7th and 8th position, which they could make if all things go well moving forward now.
Now, the super obvious one, of course, is Sevu Reese. And Sevu, while he's, you know, he's got that record for the Crusaders of being the top try scorer at the Crusaders, 54 tries in 70 games. He's now got 99 first-class tries, one try away from 100. His strike rate, as they showed on the weekend in a graphic, 79%. He scores in 79% of his Super Rugby games. Now, just to put that into context, Will Jordan's at 76, Joely Vendieri at 74 are the next two best in Super Rugby history. The guys at the top of the try scoring ladder, TJ Pettinato, 62 tries at 38%, Savia, 37%, Folau, 61%. This guy is an incredible worker, an incredible strike rate. Is he the most effective winger in Super Rugby history?
Well, I think if you're going by that stats when it comes to tries, Ross, he definitely is. And I think what he has done, and you know, the wing has changed from those days. You talked around Joely Vendieri, you know, Jonah Lomu, and you know, even Rapuni Fafan and Booker, guys from back in that age. You know, the ball was given to them and been able to get onto the edge and then them scoring tries. You look at Sevu Reese now, he doesn't just wait on the wing and score his tries. When he is given opportunities, when he has to score in the corner, when it's a one-on-one or he's going to score that try in the corner, he's able to do that. But what I love about him, it's his work rate off the ball. You think about even for a couple of those tries throughout the year when he will come in for a pick and go and to be able to score tries and get some hard-nosed tries in and around what the forwards do. He does that very, very well. And you look at him when he pops up in and around off 10 or off 9. His involvement in the attacking game is not just on their wing. He is always involved in. And he has plenty of opportunities to be able to score tries with the amount of work rate that he does in and around the game. And this is obviously a secondary point, Ross, but his defensive players, he's able to be able to get back, scramble, get on the ball and be able to steal it in crucial moments when they're on the back foot. So I think to answer your question when it comes to the attacking side of it, he definitely is with that strike rate and how many tries he has scored. But what I love about Sevu, he's not just an attacking player. Defensively, he's able to make reads and been able to get the ball at hard places, whether it's a jackal or been able to chase guys back. And that's what you want. And I think the day and age winger now, Ross, is a blueprint of what Sevu Reese is able to do on the attacking side of the ball and defensive side as well.
Is he just a guy with amazing vision? Is that what it is? He just understands the game at another level?
Yeah, look, I think he's been in the All Blacks and he's been in that environment. So, you know, he'd be very comfortable. You know, he had a lot of work to do with Richie and, you know, Richie was very consistent in around how he played. So, you know, when you're having conversations with guys like that on a regular basis, it's only going to then, you know, flow over to your game. So, but what happens to him, it's not luck. When you move fast and you put yourself in good positions with his work rate, good things are going to happen. So yes, he does have vision, but at the same time, you know, if you're lazy and you don't have that fitness capability, you're not going to put yourselves into those positions. So, you know, Seve does that because he's fit and he goes out there looking for work. So yes, he has a vision, Ross, but you know, good things happen to players when you put yourself and you work hard for those first three steps, or yeah, work hard in general in every single facet of your game.
But what I find really interesting is he'll pop up on the left wing, he'll pop up in the ruck on the left wing, he'll pop up in the midfield, he'll be on the right wing, you know, stop going or stepping or whatever. When it comes to the team and you've got a guy who's got that roving allowance to be anywhere he wants to be in order to affect the game, how does the rest of the team pan out? I mean, obviously he's not on the right wing all the time because sometimes he's over on the left wing. Do you just have to look at the space and fill it out? Or, you know, do you have players who go, okay, well, I'm going to have to train a little bit on the right wing because I know Sevi's not going to be there all the time if something goes wrong?
No, I think it's just identifying the space. And I think most wingers in world rugby, and especially at the international level, most wingers don't stay on their wing. And, you know, if you're looking at the phase play shape, you know, some teams, if you're looking, for example, you know, your first three phases of your attack, you might be on one side of the field and you might get to the 15-meter zone of that, of the same way that you've been. And then, you know, they overload a ruck by three or four on that far side, blind side. And there's no point in the winger staying there. So guys like Seve Reese, you know, guys like James Lowe, Mark Talia, for example, once they see that, that's in your structures and that's the attacking coaches will be able to say, well, we've done that. How can we move you in and around? We can move you around off nine. We can remove you like, off Rivers Rahan, or we can have you in a second pivot, be able to be an inside ball, be a roving runner off that kind of wider space. So I think the DNA of wingers being able to just be on one side of the field, it doesn't happen a lot. And Seve Reese in that Crusaders about knowing and playing with him a lot. He just goes where he sees the space, and the communication within that that phase play structure gives him the ability to be able to rove and be in multiple spaces throughout the game.
Funnily enough, I've got a text through from Chipper, and Chipper completely agrees. He says he's the winger that changed the way wingers worked off the ball across the field, not just sitting on their wing. I believe he also changed the game defensively and with the kick chase with James Lowe. So you're both on the same page.
Yep.
The question now is, you look at how Caleb Clark went on the weekend with the impact he brought off the bench. You look at how great Talia is with his work rate and the way he scores and creates differences in games. When you look at that All Black wing combination, are we looking at Talia left, Reese right, and Ralph on the bench? Oh, not Ralph, Clark on the bench, different Caleb.
Possibly. That's the thing that the coaches will be talking around in and around the selection. But I think what it has done, I think those names you have named, Ross, will be in and around that those outsides that will be selected, I think, for the outside backs. I think, you know, you can use Mark on both sides of the wing. You can do Seve both sides of the wing. But I think, you know, at the moment in that right winger, you'd have to think Seve Reese would be the front runner with Will Jordan not being in that position. And, you know, he would probably even move to fullback. So, yeah, Seve's definitely in the conversation. Mark Talia's in the conversation. Caleb Clark's in the conversation. You look at the Chiefs with Nana Satoru, who's playing very well, who can play both sides. You've got Narawa, who's come back from injury. So we've got a lot of outside backs putting their hands up for selection. But yeah, those three names, I think, Ross, would be in and around, I think, penciled in with their performances and, I guess, the currency of being in their All Black squad before.
Now, this will warm your heart, just jumping back to the Crusaders, Bryn. I know how much you love them, and I know how much you love the Crusaders fans. We've got something through. So we're going to do something slightly different this week when it comes to giving away the player sport ball. We're not going to do it for a question. We're going to do it for an email through from Fitz. Now, Fitz says, good day. My 86-year-old mother wanted Crusaders tickets for her birthday. She lives in Gisborne and flew down with her daughters to watch the game against the Rebels. Doreen, who's 86 years old, grew up in Christchurch and moved to Gisborne in her 20s. She's been a loyal and vocal supporter of all Canterbury teams. I'm not sure if you do any shout-outs or anything like that, but it would make her year if she got a mention somehow. Well, Doreen, really appreciate your dedication to the Crusaders, to your team, your love for the sport, and for that alone, we'd love to give this to you, for your grandkids, for your kids to play around in the backyard, whatever it might be, the player's sport ball coming your way, Doreen. Really appreciate your support for rugby and how much you love it. And a big congratulations to Fitz too for sending us a message about his mum. Jeez, those Crusaders fans, they are very loyal, passionate people.
And they definitely are. And Doreen, congratulations. And obviously, thank you for continued support, along with a lot of Crusaders players, Crusaders fans that have done it tough this year. But just to finish on the Crusaders, Ross, I just want to mention one last thing is I was really impressed with their defense. They operated at 97% on the weekend. And I know they didn't have to make as many tackles, but when you make 100 tackles and miss three, it's a much improved side that we've talked around a lot. They have changed, I believe. They look like they are having a lot more line speed, and sometimes it is a little bit difficult when you've got the tight forwards making decisions in and around that area. But it was a much improved performance when it came to the defensive side of the game, operating at 97%. So, yeah, we'll stop talking about the Crusaders now. About our Crusader Aotearoa running forward. We'll move forward. A move in the right direction.
Oh, there was plenty of All Blacks chat in there as well, because Scott Barrett could well be the All Blacks captain, who knows, and Xavier Reese, the All Blacks right winger. So we'll call that All Blacks chat, shall we? And I'd also just like to say thank you to Nathan, who won last week's pool, young fella, the son of Chris, who wrote in.
Ross, James and Bryn. I really love my rugby ball.
Thank you for saying thank you for the ball. We really appreciate it. And all the best with your rugby, mate. Let's move on to the Highlanders. The Highlanders versus the Force. 7-6 under the roof. No rain, no conditions affecting it. 7-6. It was a tough watch. We've had a few complaints about the Highlanders and how we haven't covered them enough in this time. Bryn, talk to me about the Highlanders. What is going wrong there?
Are you sure there wasn't any rain there, Ross?
Apparently not.
No, it seemed like there's a bit of rain there. Look, I think both teams were desperate. And they played desperate. I think, there were some really good moments in that game where both teams were able to try and make line breaks, were able to get through, but it was the last pass or the last decision making from the players or whatever was required. You look at on the weekend, I think within the first half, I think there were 13 turnovers, there were 7 turnovers and 8 handling errors from the Highlanders. You know what I mean? And I think you look early on, there's a front of the line out with Holland. They had the exact structure that they wanted. They just weren't able to get over the line. All they had to do was catch the ball and they go over the line. And I think, early on, Bruce Patchell put in an attacking kick for Talia, who knocks the ball on in that 22-metre zone. So it's been a continued theme, I think, for the Highlanders this year. And, Billy Harmon touched on it after the game. They're able to build momentum. They're able to play some passage of play to ask questions of defense, but it's that last pass where it's the last decision making error that is really costing them. So that's the trend that I think, Ross, that I've seen this year with the Highlanders. But I think for the Highlanders, it's been able to get a win, and their goal is to make that top eight, and it stops that, I guess, kind of losing streak that they did have. It was ugly, but the points that I touched on, it seems to be a common trend with them, but they've picked up a win, and I think that's the most important thing that Billy touched on after the game. And they'll review and they'll want to get those mistakes that they are making in the games, and I guess hopefully try and change that in the short term for the long term success. But yeah, a pretty frustrating game to watch. Certainly been 7-6 and thinking there was.
Certainly wasn't for a lack of effort, eh? The Tava Tava Nawai was one of the best non-tries you've ever seen in your life, going down that right-hand side before footing his foot in touch. The other one that I thought was quite a wonderful move, well worked, was off the back of the line-out where Garden Bashup came through the middle of the line out and the person at the back popped it into him. It was a really nice thinking play, a different kind of line out move. Yep. They're trying things, they're innovating. Yes, a knock on at the end of the movement cost them, but they are trying things.
Well, that's it. And if you look at the stats around defenders beating and line breaks and offloads, they're making good numbers and it's very good. But like you said, it's the last pass or not being able to get things right in crucial moments. That just seems to be the trend at the moment. So you'd be really concerned, I think, if you're not making those line breaks or being able to beat defenders. But the positive sign for Highlanders fans is that they are doing that. If they can just hold on to the ball and be able to score and execute in those moments, more times than not, they'll score points and they'll put teams under pressure and they will get results. So that's the challenge for the Highlanders, I believe. So hopefully they can change that. But, they are making teams, have to defend them, but they're just not sticking at the last pass.
Well, they're in the top eight, and that's all you need to have a crack in the playoffs, right? I don't think that they necessarily look like they have the quality to get much further than the quarterfinals, but you never quite know. When you look at the table, there is a marked difference between the Hurricanes, the Blues, the Brumbies and the Chiefs probably, and everybody else. They definitely stand out as almost certain semi-finalists and the chance of going and beating them on the road probably quite unlikely.
Yes, right now, if the semi-finals or quarter-finals were right now, but, you know, there's still a lot of rugby to play, and all you need is, you know, to come hot at the back end of the year. It might be two or three results at the back end of the year where you're playing your best footy to then have an opportunity to play against a Brumbies or a Hurricanes or a Chiefs or a Blues. And you're not too sure how they're going to be at the back end of the year. They look good now, but I think, you know, look at the Chiefs and the Blues in the past, you know, they probably weren't at their top end stage when it came to the finals time. So there is still time for those teams to, I guess we use the league analogy around coming in hot at the back end of the year. There's still those opportunities, but yeah, they've got a lot to improve on. So I guess even have a chance in those quarterfinals against the top end teams that you've touched on.
And there are some interesting matchups in those last few weeks. We've obviously got the Blues Hurricanes, not this week, next week. So that's going to make a big difference to the top of the table. Then you get into those last couple of weeks. I think the Chiefs play the Canes and the Blues in the last 2 weeks. So I don't know who makes these draws, but whoever makes the draw, big clap for you, because that is going to be everything on the line in the last couple of weeks. We're probably going to see whoever gets top, second, and, you know, right through to the final emerge out of that. We're going to see who really is the business.
100%. And, you know, sometimes it's a good and a bad thing. You become a little bit finals tested when you do play those tough teams. But then I think understanding how you use your squad, knowing that you want to go to you want to go really deep into the back end of the tournament. So do you want to play five games of derby games to be able to and top quality teams at the back end? It's really tough. But I think at the same time, you know, this is all hypothetical, Ross. You know, if you are a team that finishes first or second, you know, the Crusaders, if they do get their stuff right, you can end up playing the Crusaders in that 7th, 8th position. I don't think the Crusaders can make that 6th position with how much points the other teams have accumulated. But, you know, it's going to be pretty important, I think, if you're going to finish first. You want to probably finish first or second, you know, first, I believe, if you're those top teams, and, you know, probably trying to miss the Crusaders at the first part of those quarterfinal stages.
Let's get to the Chiefs. 38-22 against the Waratahs. Look, the Waratahs, apart from those wins over the Crusaders, haven't been the best team this year. The Chiefs, though, again, look good. Samapeni Finau is going out there smashing people. They've got options on attack. They look like a quality team that are building their way towards the end of the year.
Yeah, look, they are. And if you look at their first 20 minutes, the Waratahs had, you know, the bulk of that possession and territory, and, you know, scored two tries, and there were two yellow cards that the Chiefs had to deal with. And then, like you said, Ross, they were really clinical in terms of when they needed to be. I think their set-piece strikes, whether it's off line-out or scrum close to the line, you don't want to be giving the Chiefs opportunities, because their set-piece strikes off scrum and line-out, very, very hard to defend. So, yeah, look, it was I think for Clayton, he'd be pretty happy, you know, knowing that going to Sydney is very tough. We've talked around how tough it is at the moment to get wins over in Australia, and I think to come over the top and score five tries, you know, in the second half to get that job done, yeah, they'll be very, very pleased. And picking up that type of win, I believe, is going to be very valuable for them. So you're very, very impressive. And I think, you know, guys like, you know, Wallace Atiti, we've talked around Hoskins Atutu, and a lot of number eights that have played really well this year with Brandon Yosse. I think he's one guy that has just played really well with the opportunities that he's been given, the work rate that he shows. And, you know, even when he scores his try off the back of the scrum, the second efforts and third efforts that he does, he's definitely one to watch, and some guy that I've been impressed with the last probably fortnight with how he's played with the Chiefs.
Incredible power. Let's go back to your point about their set-piece strikes. What is it that makes those set-piece strikes so hard to defend?
The one in particular that I really enjoyed watching was Nadal's try, second try, I believe. You look at the set piece, and, you know, sometimes when you're looking, when you've got a dominant team that goes for a line out drive, you've got to be able to defend that first. But if you look at Cortez at our team's wide pass to, Paul Hippie, you know, that pass is beating 3 to 4 players. And if you're looking at that kind of 12, 13 winger with all the animation, all the players that are out there and doing their role, it's very, very hard to defend. It's not the first time the Chiefs have scored off line out strikes, but it's very hard when you've got everybody running their same role. Everybody's running at the same hole and knowing exactly where they need to be, and the animation that's in and around that 13, 14 defender of the Waratahs. It's very, very hard to defend. So they do that off line out strikes, and then off scrums as well. They get to the people they need to, and they execute under pressure, which is really hard. Lastly, you look at Damon McKenzie's try, the one that he set up for Ngarawa. they knew with that pressure that the Waratahs bring off that, he bridged passes right to the edge, knowing that there's going to be line speed pressure on him. And the review and preview that they've done, they're all on the same page. So very impressive when it comes to line out strikes and scrum strikes. So yeah, very, very impressive with the Chiefs when it comes to that this year.
A classic moment at the end of that game, Noel Awa was being interviewed by Cam Shepherd by the Stan Sports crew. Left him hanging. It was one of the absolute ripper moments.
You've just got to know when you're having those interviews, you've just got to lock eyes real early doors if you're going to go for a handshake or a hand clap. So yeah, I felt sorry for him, but to his credit, he palmed it off and laughed into the old to himself. So you've got to go early doors and lock eyes. Can you get your hand out early, Ross? Unless you see this kind of memes or kind of situation.
You sound like a person who's been caught by that at some point.
I haven't, but I've seen a lot of guys that have just kind of haven't locked eyes. I think there was a couple last year that happened, but yeah, I always just try and lock eyes real early doors and get the hand out early, just so you know that when the conversation's done, you're not going to be standing like poor Imoni was on the weekend.
Tony, when you got the director in your ear and you're having to think about turning the camera and all of those things, the last thing you need is a really low hand. You are almost better to throw it upstairs, you know, completely in the eye line.
Or it's just, you know, if it does happen to you, maybe just go and put your hand on the shoulder so that hopefully it does come back to you. But then, you know, you run the risk of having double trouble of getting rejected in that way. So, yeah, I think Imoni, he'll be all right. He took it like a champ and, yeah, it was pretty funny to see that.
The Super Rugby tipping comp that we're in, of course, the Aotearoa Rugby Pod League. If you're within the tipping.super.rugby and you're not in our league, please click and join us. The winner of that league will get a spot on the show at the end of the competition. So please join us if you haven't already within that league. The Tars and the Canes this week. The Canes at home. I'm imagining there is going to be a bounce back of epic proportions.
Yeah, you have to think so. I think, you know, for a team that's been running high and it's their first loss, sometimes when you have your loss, you go a little bit deeper around your prep and your review, and you're just knowing, you know, that they let that one slip against the Brumbies, they'll be very, very disappointed. And, you know, they'll want to get back on the horse. And I think we'll see a much more improved Hurricanes, a little bit too much for the Waratahs on the weekend.
I'm with you there. I just can't imagine, especially the way the Tars have been away from home, that there could be anything but that. The Rebels have got the Blues at home. Now, the Blues obviously are on the road. They've had good success first up. Is it easy to back up success on the road like that when you're in a different place and you're moving to a different city and you're in a new hotel room and all of those kind of things? Is it a straightforward win for the Blues in Melbourne?
No, not necessarily. I think with how the Rebels have played this year and the collision area, which will be a big thing that Vern will be talking around against the Rebels and trying to win that. But yeah, I think it'll be a tough game. I think sometimes, you know, I think for the Blues, they're on tour, which I think is actually a really good thing. You can be you can have those conversations on tour. You can obviously connect as a group and being able to have an understanding of being able to tour as a team, which I think is really important in this day and age, not going to South Africa. So yeah, I think even though, you know, playing at the Rebels and how hard it's been to be able to win on tour this year in Australia, I think the Blues will get the job done against the Rebels.
Okay, we've got 8th v 9th as well this weekend. Moana Pacifica at home against the Highlanders. This again is one I'm struggling to pick.
Where's it being played, Ross?
It's their first game in Tonga, Brent. So it's a big weekend for Moana Pacifica.
Yeah, massive. I think, you know, we've talked a lot around being able to get them a home base, and I know they're only in Tonga for this fixture, but you know, I'm not too sure what the conditions are like, but if it's anything like Fiji or, you know, Samoa that they've played there respectively before, it is going to be tough for the Highlanders to travel. And I believe that the Moana Pacifica, you know, I'm not too sure how early they'll go in the week, but you have to think the Highlanders, you know, I think it's a really tough decision or tough to be able to call who's going to win this. But yeah, I just think the Highlanders, if they can stop with the mistakes and being able to, I guess, just hold on to the ball for a couple more phases to score some points, then they might be a bit too tough for Moana Pacifica, who I think were a lot better against the Fijian draw and tough conditions in Lotoka. But I think the Highlanders, with where this season and what they're wanting, you know, I'm going to pick the Highlanders over Moana.
I think I'm going to go Moana, just to because I feel like they've been in Fiji, they're now on their way there, they're well and truly acclimatised, and this is a big game for them. They don't often get to play in the islands. I wonder whether that will be a bigger thing for them. The Crusaders and the Reds. The Crusaders at home, do you think they'll stay up?
Yeah, I think they will. I think with the Pullmans, especially around their set piece, when it came to scrum time, they were dominant. They were dominant around the line out when it came to both on attack and especially defensively with the line out steals that Skirtle was able to do early doors. But, you know, I think the Reds and especially their forward pack, you know, if the Crusaders want to have the high handling error count that they have shown, even though it was a little bit better in the second half against the Rebels, the Reds will give them trouble. Yeah, they've shown a lot this year in and around when they do get into that 22-meter zone. They will go high face counts. Their breakdown area around that kind of space is really good. So they need to be on the job there. I'm going to pick the Crusaders. An improved performance against the Rebels gives me an opportunity to be able to back them. And I think that forward pick, hopefully now with Skirtle coming back, and even with the likes of Ethan Blackadder, you know, I thought Cullen Grace and Leo Willey, that loose forward trio, worked very, very, very well. I'm not too sure with Leo Willey if he is injured or not. If he is injured, you've got Tom Christie that can come back. But yeah, I'm going to pick the Crusaders to get over the Reds in Christchurch.
I imagine the last two are fairly straightforward. Chiefs are home against the Force. Chiefs?
Yep.
Brumbies
yep,
are Chiefs. Home against the Drua, who struggle on the road. Brumbies, based on what we've seen last week.
Well, if there's anything, what they did on the weekend, if they can win those collision areas and not give, you know, the loose balls or have a high handling area count, which the Fijian Drua would love to do off that kind of counter-attack ability, you know, there'll be too much of the Fijian Drua, especially being away from home.
Sweet as Bryn. Hey, well, thank you very much, mate. You must be coming to a close soon of your time in Japan for this season?
Yep, we are. We've got one more game against Toshiba and then we're on our break. So one more game and then I'll be able to get back home, mate, get in the studio with Big Jipper and get to see hopefully his shorts and see what his quads are like in person.
Well, he'll be back in the studio next week to defend himself. We can bring it up all over again. Thanks again, Bryn. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks, mate. Good to see you.
And thank you very much for joining us once again on the Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Send us an email, aotearoarugbypod@sky.co.nz. Send a comment into the YouTube comment section. We love to hear from you, engage with your questions and your comments. And, of course, you can catch us on Sky platforms, on YouTube, as an audio pod, and on Rugby Pass TV. So thank you very much for joining us once again. Mā te wā.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.